Welcome to Church 307. I'll practice that so I'll be ready for you. Thank you for joining us on this Monday at 4. You can join us live every Monday at 4. And please do get in the chat. We are glad you are here. If you like this, please give it a thumbs up, share it with your friends, and subscribe to get the good word out there. Grant, cook it.
Yep, yep. Send it.
So, my name's Mitch. I'm glad you're here. Sitting with me today is Reverend Mike Lawrence Wilson.
You know my middle name.
Oh, I'm impressed. It's funny that I said your first name only as Mike, but I said
you didn't say Michael.
Yeah,
it's not legit anymore. You better start over.
Hello, my name is Mike Lawrence Wilson.
But Jesus knows him as Michael. Also sitting at our table is Stephen Michael Roberts Nichols. Is that right?
Dude, you nailed it.
Okay.
You're on a roll.
Four names?
I have four names.
That's impressive.
When I got in trouble, it was awful.
Terrifying.
So there was, is it a good time for a story?
Yes, it is.
So we lived in Arizona for a little bit when I was a little kid. I don't remember this, but I'd get down into like in the corners of where everything was fenced off. Apparently there's like tarantulas and scorpions and stuff back in there. And my mom would yell, Stephen Michael Robert Nichols, get your butt over here right now. Well, about a week later, we go to the store and I'm sitting in that little buggy cart thing. Some lady comes up. She's like, oh, you're so cute. What's your name? I said, Stephen Michael Robert Nichols, get your butt over here right now. My mom went as red as Mitch's beard. It was crazy.
Is that just because your parents are indecisive or couldn't decide a middle name?
We're going to go with that. Okay. Yeah. No, I think they just had good friends. One Stephen, one Michael, one Robert.
Gotcha. And
so, yeah, they couldn't. They said Stephen Michael Nichols didn't sound good. Stephen Robert Nichols didn't sound good. So they, however you want to look at it, they cursed or blessed me with two middle names.
That's awesome.
That is fun. Stephen is a pastor over at another church in this town of Gillette, Wyoming called Journey Church.
He's one of those jack of all trade pastors.
Yeah.
Doing worship and preaching and teaching and
doing what I can.
Everything.
Yeah, he does it all.
Taking notes from these guys.
Yeah.
Also a Princess Bride fan. Is that what that is?
That is correct. I'm a fan of Mowedge. Yes.
His mug says, what is it?
Says, hello. My name is Inigo Montoya. You drank my coffee. Prepare to die.
Okay, good.
To be fair, I didn't touch your mug.
Good. Because you'd be dead.
Yes, exactly right.
Don't even look at it.
You guys were friends in high school.
Yes, sir. We were in a...
started in junior high. Man.
Incredibly successful metal band.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sold a lot of albums?
Yeah, we were huge on MySpace.
Okay, good.
European MySpace. Yeah, so it's okay. myspace.com.eu.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Is it still there? Can you still...
Oh, yeah. If you guys want to check it out, I'm not going to tell the band name, so happy hunting. Yeah, we did. We played music from junior high to college.
Yeah, easily into college.
A lot of fun. We wrote our own stuff and had fun doing rehearsals, yep. Kind of going around Wyoming.
Yeah, we did that. South Dakota, mm-hmm. Some Montana.
It was fun.
Oh, of course, Europe. Yeah,
like yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Of course, yep. Right. Of course. Right.
Yep. Europe, yeah. Mitch and I were even roommates in Black Hills State University. Yes, and we so were. That was a lot of fun.
In the wild days.
Mm.
Yes.
They won't tell any stories from those days.
Yeah,
no. A lot of stories from the earlier days, but now they're just going to get silent.
Yeah, it's the BC days, boys. Yeah, you don't talk about those.
Yeah.
It's like Bruno. You don't talk about it.
Seriously.
Hey, we are talking about mentorship today, and we're going to kind of dive into a story from the life of Christ in which he sat at a table. How many of these stories that we do are Jesus at a table?
Dude, he was...
Dude likes to eat. He likes to recline.
A glutton and a drunkard. Isn't that what they said?
Yes, that's what I heard.
I call him a tabletop man.
Tabletop man.
That's why he had table talks.
People say that. That's what people. GM. I say that.
Mm. The story we're talking about today is, so last week we did Jesus in the temple, throwing over the tables. A few days later, he goes to the upper room. It's called the upper room, many people say, because it's up above what is historically known as David's tomb. Kind of a big room that they'd use for social gatherings. And so Jesus goes to the upper room, meets with his disciples to celebrate the Passover meal, a big celebration, big feast. At the end of this celebration, he gives them some bread and he says, this is my body, which is broken for you. for the forgiveness of sins. He gives them, after the meal, he gives them some wine, and they pass the cup around, and he says, this is my blood. And when as he does this, he says, whenever you eat this meal, kind of referencing the Passover meal, remember me. Rather than remember Moses, he says, because that was kind of the idea of the Passover meal, he says, remember me. And so he's kind of hijacking the Passover meal. And he's like, now it's not about Moses anymore. Now it's about me. And
I think some of those guys would have been almost like, Jesus, you're saying this wrong, right? Because they had their Jewish book, the Haggadah, I can never say it right, but they had this, like, they would hold the bread up and they would read or they would say what they were supposed to, like, this bread is the bread of affliction and all this other stuff. And so when Jesus gets up there and goes, this is me, this is my body, I wonder if they were like, whoa, wow. Jesus, yeah, you, and, I mean, he's sitting with his dudes too.
Yeah.
He's sitting with the 12.
Yeah.
And so
what does this say about Jesus's priorities? If right before he dies, obviously they're going to celebrate the Passover meal, but who he chooses to sit there with and the conversations that he has, what does that teach us? We always say that Jesus didn't come to establish a religion. He came to establish a relationship, a relationship with, at that time, immediately with his disciples, but also a relationship with us, his church, with the body.
Yep.
So what does that tell us about our priorities and how we should interact with our circles?
Relational, I don't know, community. A big part of our life group is table time.
Yeah.
So, and there is a lot of mentorship that happens inside of that. It's also the third thing.
Yeah. Third space. Yep.
So,
The Christian word for this type of community is koinonia, which is where we get the word communion. So, Lord's Supper, Last Supper, Eucharist, communion, all kind of the same idea, but koinonia is this idea of spiritual relationship, which is deeper than just a surface level friendship. We have small talk, or even just an emotional relationship. Mm. This is a spiritual connecting. And I think this is kind of what Jesus is demonstrating for us. We talk a lot about how the time that the average family spends at the table has decreased so much.
Well, it used to be like people would spend an hour and a half, if not more, just sitting at the table and conversing, pouring into each other, checking in on days. I'm sure if it was anything like my family, you know, popping a few jokes at each other, picking on one another. Uh-huh. But that's what I did for years with the Austin family, actually. And so going over to their house and that big old rectangular table, today means something so much more than just a piece of wood in the kitchen.
What happened at those table gatherings?
Mostly nothing deep, most of the time.
Well, your grandma Ruth, I would always sit next to her, and I was on the left, it felt like, so I was in the place of honor, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
But she was always, Stephen, you look like you're hungry, and she'd sit there scraping food onto my plate, and I was like,
pass it on.
I've had four helpings now. I can't fit anymore. And she's like, boy, you look hungry, and she just feed me. And so,
what, you take some,
yeah.
and then I'll take some. She's like,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh. So she takes her portion, and scoops it on my plate.
I don't underestimate the value of just the community.
Yeah.
The communing together, because it is we did laugh, and there probably was some conversations about, I don't know if you, I mean, you were there on Sunday afternoons a lot, so there probably was some message talk maybe, but honestly, I don't remember that. So I don't know if that was very common, but it was just talking. What happened last week? What are you guys doing? What is your life looking like?
Yeah, your dad asked a lot about just what was going on in my life personally, and even though I was over there every day of the week, like he would still ask and was showing curiosity.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's that curiosity that opened up a lot inside of my story to be able to share that. So
I feel like all the great mentorship experiences I've had started with good questions. Like somebody took the time to ask me questions that made me think, that made me get words out that I wouldn't have said otherwise. We always say the family that eats together stays together. Mm-hmm. And I think these table time, I feel like the families that have inside jokes,
yeah,
like you must spend a lot of time at the table because you keep talking about things that I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like something good is happening in this family. It's annoying to be around you right now. but something right. good is happening at the.
But table. You almost want in though. Like, what is that? I gotta know. Yeah. And it's there's again, it's attractive.
Yep.
This is something I want for my family or to be in with your group. I want to know these things.
Yep.
Yeah, that's until you did hop in on that joke, like, yeah, Betty. And everyone's looking at you like, step back, son.
You have no idea what I said.
It really was a Shawshank Redemption. So Jesus is sitting at the table with his disciples. They are communing together. He's mentoring them in this situation. Now let's talk about who's at the table. So it's his 12, the right. apostles. So at the table, you've got some people that used to be outcasts who he's now brought into the inner circle. Mm-hmm. You've got some people that are going to be loyal to him to the death no matter what. You've got other people. Judas is at the table who is not going to be. You got Peter at the table who is about to deny Christ. And so what does that communicate to us about who we mentor, who we fellowship with, the community that we hold?
I think one of the biggest things is like we read in the Gospel of John this kind of same story, but how John is saying that he would have been on Jesus's right-hand side because the way they would have been eating at that table, it was this like U-shaped table that they would sit around, and it was low to the ground. They didn't have chairs, and so when they were reclining, they were actually leaning somewhat to the left. And so John would have had his head, because he said he was resting his head on the breast of Jesus, right? Well, so John is right there. Then you have Jesus. And then to the left, which was also, it was known as a place of honor, Jesus invites Judas Iscariot.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I got to ask real quick, when was the last time that you either baptized or dedicated someone whose name was Judas?
Never have. Judas. Not, or Lucifer. I've never baptized.
Never. Not got it. No,
that's
no.
a shame.
Lucy.
No, nobody. No? Those are names that we've chosen. Maybe we name our dogs those names. Not. I don't know.
That's something.
I say that if your name is Judas.
Gosh, what a great name. It's a strong name.
Actually, I think it means like praise or something totally. Like that. So it's actually a good name.
Yeah.
But the dude drug it through the mud that nobody wants to use it anymore. But he would have been at the left of Christ, sitting in a place of honor. And Jesus, of course, being fully God and fully man, knew what he was about to do, but still chose to put him in a place to show, I still love you, regardless of what's about to happen.
And he washes his feet. And then he turns around and he serves this guy who's about to betray him.
Yeah, yeah, actually passes, because I think the bowl would have passed that direction, too.
Yep.
And so he would have dipped his hand, like it says in here, the one who... where is it? The one who I have put my hand in the bowl with me will betray me.
Wow.
And he's still choosing to have that act of community, of koinonia with Judas.
Right.
It's amazing.
The grace that Jesus gave throughout his ministry just kept turning people off with the adulterous woman, with the whatever outcast he happened to be interacting with and giving grace to. It's just amazing back then, even more so. Than it is today, but we just continue to see this grace. And so what does that communicate to us about? Because the point of what Jesus is doing here at the table is he's kind of passing the baton. This is kind of his farewell. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay, I've mentored you, or we've used the word disciple. I've discipled you. Now it's your turn to do the same. He's passing that baton on to his disciples. What does that communicate to people who are nervous about leading or discipling somebody or mentoring somebody because they think about their past?
Yeah.
I think it's crazy because, we actually showed this video when we do like life group promos, trying to get people to want to lead, let them know, hey, new semester's coming, all that stuff. And there was one where it's showing all these biblical dudes sitting down. It's like, well, why are you qualified? Moses. And they're going through, or King David, why are you qualified? He's like, well, it's that first word you said. King, right? but then they start going, it's like, but you like killed people and you did all this. Well, then they get this fella to walk in. His name's like Joe or something like that, right? And like, Joe, have you killed anyone? It's like, no. Or Joe, have you XYZ, whatever it is? He's like, I haven't done any of that. And they're just stoked. They're like, this is our guy. And like, well, I don't have any qualifications. It's like, well, do you love Jesus? Yes. Do you want to see people like getting plugged in and getting to know Jesus? Yeah. Then you're our guy.
Bingo.
That's our guy right there.
We talked about a lady who volunteers in our New Life Kids ministry, And she was so on the fence trying to decide if she should volunteer or not, because she's had a rough past. She attempted suicide and went through some depression stuff. And she kind of was insecure about volunteering. And she went and talked to Darcy about it. Eventually, Darcy encouraged her and said, it's time for you to begin to lead. And you've grown since then. And God has taught you some things as a result. She starts serving. And because God's amazing, she's teaching a student in her New Life Kids class. And the student confesses, I've been thinking about killing myself. And this leader is able to have a conversation with this student on a level that very few people could, not many people could to the extent that she could. It was able to talk to him, was able to bring the family into the conversation. Wow. Like, God can use even our mess ups, even our screw ups, and do great things with screw ups.
Oh man. I mean, Hebrews 11 is one of my favorite portions of scripture, because I think everyone in Hebrews 11, except maybe Enoch, just because we don't have a lot of dirt on him.
Yeah.
But everyone in there is, they have a past, they have a brokenness to them.
Yep.
But my favorite one, and I'm sure she wasn't happy about it, but it says, by faith, Rahab the prostitute.
Yeah.
Like she's like, couldn't you have struck in that part from the record? Like, did we really have to have this? Like, I kind of wonder if that was her heart, but if anything, it just shows, yes, God can use even you.
Yeah.
And that's talking to anybody who might be watching or on the fence about this stuff, because that's all it takes is that one step.
Yep.
And then God's going to use that faithfulness.
We have a tremendous amount of ex-cons, alcoholics, leaders in our church who have experienced things that you would assume would disqualify them from leadership. But so often that kind of lights a fire under them, and it gives them an excitement about the grace that they've received that then they want to pass on to other people. And so, but I also think, I've wondered a lot about this. I've seen within those leaders, a lot of those leaders, still some shame, still some, I still got to hide that past. Like, I feel like I want to lead now. I'm ready to lead, but still there's a hiding that happens, and I'm not ready for it to be a testimony yet. And I think that's probably true about Peter when he's preaching after he denies Christ. Like, can we forget that happened? Can we hide it? Can we brush it under the rug? I think Jesus would say, no, that is your story. That's your testimony. I brought you through that so that I can use it. Like, you wouldn't have gone through it if I couldn't use it.
Right.
He uses all things for good.
Well, and Revelation tells us that we can overcome the evil one by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony.
Amen.
And your testimony doesn't even have to be something powerful. Like, think of the dude who was blind. They interviewed him like 3 or 4 different times. He finally gets sick of it. And pretty much in my summary, he's just like, I don't know what happened. All I know is I was blind. Now I see. And it was because of Jesus.
Yep.
That was his testimony.
My testimony.
He's done.
Yep. Yeah. So I think there's a lot to be seen in who's sitting at this table and who's allowed to serve. Who did God call? And we talk a lot about how the outcast is usually who God went for. God's like, yeah, those outcasts, people, those are the ones who are likely to fully give themselves to me and not just have one foot in and one foot out and halfway do it and halfway not do it. Once they're in, they are all in. And so if that's you, if you feel like you have a past that you are ashamed of, please don't let it hold you back. Step into the potential that God created you for and become the person that God created you to be.
Amen.
So we talk about Jesus's leadership ability. Sometimes we talk about how the things Jesus did was weird, but I think sometimes we fail to recognize the things that Jesus did were brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I think we read in John this idea of Jesus being the good shepherd. I've always read that word good, and I thought it meant the gentle shepherd, the kind shepherd.
Oh, yeah.
And I've thought that, and I think he is gentle and kind. But that's not the point of that verse. It's saying, no, he's good at it. I looked up the Greek, and the Greek is kalos, which means like quality, fertile, rich.
Right.
A few verses earlier, it says the good pastures. Well, it's not saying they're gentle pastures.
Right.
It's saying they're quality. They produce well. They do their job well. Jesus isn't just a leader. Jesus isn't just a shepherd. He's the good shepherd. If you want to know how to lead, do it the way Jesus did it. And how did Jesus do it? Well, he surrounded himself. We've talked about who he surrounded himself. But then he's sitting at the table, and what's he doing? He asks questions. I think so often we come to the table with our families and we just don't have any plans. It's just, we just sit there, which I think is good. I think just unplanned community is good. However, I think it is valuable if we will come with intentional, planned questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few I always like to ask my kids. So I have a daughter who's 4, and then I have a son who's 2. He's going to be 3 at the end of April. But I'll always ask him, like, what was the highlight of your day? Just to find something that was good,
yep.
And then just ask them, what is something that upset you today?
Yeah.
And just kind of almost like learning to process emotions. And like if Quinn says, well, so-and-so didn't share at school today or Titus spit in my face today or something, you know?
Never do that.
No, never.
Kids go to school together, so.
So I had to throw something in there, right?
He has to feel the wrath of my kid.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, well, my daddy will beat your daddy up. Yeah. Like, we haven't got there yet, but we all know Mike would win, so it's not fair.
You guys would be like, my dad can out theology your dad.
That's right. But I have a mug that says, no, that's probably, yeah, no. Probably says theologian on it. I don't know. You got one of those?
I don't.
Oh, we should probably get you one.
A theologian mug?
A theologian mug. That'll be your new mug.
Okay. I need a theologian.
That's right. We'll hook you up.
My mug is from my alma mater to prove that I
studied. You are smart. SMRT.
Yep.
Smart.
That's what I am.
Man, I'm jellioso. That's the Greek word for jealous.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. No, not even close.
Jellioso sounds like more like a dessert.
Oh, right.
I think you guys are pretty intentional at the table. What kind of things do you talk about?
We kind of do the same thing. We do a what was a success. We say what was a good thing today.
Mm-hmm.
What was a high, and then another one we ask what was a hard thing today.
Yep.
And then one thing that I took from my dad is. After church, we'll say, I'll ask, what's something you learned in, or what you guys talk about in church today? So, yeah, it kind of goes along that same thing.
Yeah.
And then another big aspect, I think asking questions is big because there is sometimes I feel like our dad looks at us and is like, you can see the gears turning. Like, I don't remember what was for lunch today.
Yeah.
I don't really understand. So, but
yeah, I think we have those go-tos that are just like, tell us about the best part of your day. Tell us about the worst part of your day. But mm-hmm. I've really been intentional lately about asking some more pointed questions. Yep. Like, the other day I asked my son, do you ever doubt anything about God? Or do you ever doubt any of the Bible stories that you hear? And oh man, it led to a conversation. He started talking about how none of his friends at school believe in God. And he was telling them about Jesus, and he got really scared because then they all said that they don't believe in Jesus. And like that question led to a conversation with our kid that he wasn't just going to bring up. He wasn't just going to tell us that story because he's not usually a very transparent kid.
Right.
And so I've tried to point my questions more at a specific idea or specific thought. And that's kind of led to further digging, I think, things that he didn't even realize he knew or thought. But the question kind of helps him to see that. I think that's a value of mentorship versus like, I learn everything I know on YouTube. I'm like, YouTube doesn't know you. So YouTube cannot cater their content to you.
That's right.
The algorithm can try.
It's pretty strong.
Yeah, but they're just going to push you to a bunch of Ben Shapiro and
seriously,
Dave Ramsey and whoever else is on there. But
sometimes it's, I don't know about you guys, but sometimes it's hard for me to think of those deeper questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a friend who's really good at asking those. Like, obviously, that's a great question you asked, Mike. But we got this thing called a chat pack, and it's just these little questions, and we'll keep them by the dinner table.
Oh, cool!
And so if there's kind of like I don't know what to ask, I'll just pull one of those out, and they'll be. Sometimes it's something silly, sometimes it's something serious, and but they've led to some good conversation too. Like, okay, if you could. You know, heal anybody or something like that. Who would that be and why? Or if you had all the money in the world, what would you do with it?
Yeah, we'd like that.
And it's been cool to see, like, even the kids not selfishly say something like, "Well, I'm going to buy all the toys." And sometimes they do.
Yep.
But there's other days when they're like, you know, like I went on a missions trip to the Dominican Republic back in January, and I was showing kids pictures and all this stuff, and I had asked that question at one point of, "Well, if you had all the money, what would you do?" And they said, well, I would make sure that all the kids are fed at the orphanage. Huh. And you want to talk about like a proud dad moment.
Heck yeah.
And then the next, you know, what would you do? And I asked my 2-year-old son, and he either mimics Quinn or he'll say something about a chicken butt. Because he's on Guess What Chicken Butt right now. And yep. So he's like, I would buy chicken butts. Ah! And thinks he's so funny. Yeah. And so it's
somebody at my kid's school taught him the your mom jokes.
Nice. That's what you want.
Oh, 6 year old now.
It wasn't mine. Mom
jokes.
Oh, nope.
I put, yeah. So we brag about the fact that Jesus asked 307 questions in the Gospels. Woot, woot. Welcome to Church 307. This is what this is. Jesus was from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm. Proof right there.
That's what. That's why. Do the math.
Yeah.
And so Jesus.
We'll go with that.
Jesus is mentoring his disciples, asking questions, getting to the point, and allowing life impact to happen. One of the people in my life that did this incredibly well was a guy named Jason Cannegator. He's passed away since. But when I first became the pastor here, just overwhelmed, was horrible at my job, terrible communicator. And he could see it. And rather than leaving, because Mike's got not a good enough pastor, he started taking me to breakfast. And we would get to breakfast. Everybody else saw it too. But he was the one that was willing to take me and work through with me. And he would start asking me questions. He'd say things like, what's your goal here? And why are you doing this? And why'd you say that? And what was the result of that last thing you did? And how are people receiving this? And the whole time he's asking these questions, in the moment, the emotion I can remember is defensiveness. Because like, why are you asking? Do you don't trust me? Or did you hear something? Are you mad about something? And I'm like getting upset because what we're used to is shallow. We're used to just small talk conversations. I'll tell you a story about my kid and you tell me a story about your kid. And we just kind of stay shallow. And his ability to go deep really fast made me uncomfortable in a good way. It didn't feel good in the moment, but it was in a good way. It'd take us to some conversations and I was able to ask him questions about experiences that he'd have. He'd get really transparent with me and tell me about failures so I could learn from his failures. Like that was mentoring, even though it was never labeled mentoring. And he never walked up to me. He's like, hey, can I mentor you? And I've been like, heck no.
Who are you?
But he did. He just took the initiative and it made a huge impact on my life. And I think I've been uniquely blessed by the number of mentors I've had in my life. My older brother, Billy, has been obviously a huge mentor in my life, and I've hated him for half of my life before it. But
I get that.
Yeah, he's kind of a jerk. But I've learned half of what I know from him. Maybe not half, but a lot of what I know from him. And so if I'm screwed up, it's his fault. Yeah. What about you guys? Have you guys had any good mentorship experiences?
Yes, I've had a big one. I had a boss, Jamie Gilmore, at a theater I worked at, performance theater, and I worked under, she was my boss for about 10 years, but the thing that she really, I think, pressed into me was hard work, honesty, and treating people like they mattered. She treating people with worth, that they had worth, and then also, and she had a huge impact on my life.
Was that by walking beside you and working with you, or was it more like in meetings afterward? Or
she was thrown into that position, and then because she was a high capacity person, she stayed there for a while. So it was I worked alongside the boss. So yeah, it wasn't meetings. We didn't have meetings. It was walking. And walking through hallways and across grounds and setting things up with her and having live conversations and work conversations and problem solving through things and treating people with respect. I mean, just all of it.
How regular was it for her to correct you? For her to see something that you weren't doing well? I had to mess up
pretty bad.
Okay. So how did she teach you? Or was it more by example?
It was by example.
Okay.
There was a couple of times I did step out of line and not a nip, but it was quick and like, don't do that anymore. I was like, okay, that's not going to happen.
Yep.
But then
you're a fast learner.
Right. Yeah. I wish, 10 years. And then, the other one is you and Billy. I went from college to working inside of a church, underneath you and Billy. And, that's been huge. a lot of that was also side by a lot of that was meetings and like watching you guys do planning kind of like what the church was going to be. But seeing through meetings of talking through problems, talking through people, talking through solutions, and then staying steadfast to what the plan was, and this is why we do this. And
Even with that model, it's very gospel centered. These guys, when Jesus said, "Hey, follow me," they did.
Yeah.
Like they didn't just sit, go to a classroom and take notes. No, they followed him constantly.
Yeah.
Like, and it was a lot of travel. They were on their feet. They were going from town to town and just doing the work.
Yep.
But doing it side by side of Christ and failing on the way, which I had somebody tell me once that, you know, the church should be the perfect place to fail when you try something. And I agree.
Yeah.
Like we should be able to have grace for one another. It's like, hey, you tried it, didn't work so well. Let's try it a different way or let's give it a different approach. Right. But I feel like all those apostles, disciples, they would have had that same experience.
And it's kind of the difference between, I remember sitting in college in classes and they're talking about these hypothetical situations. And I'm like, I have no application to this. I can't learn.
Right.
This is just hypothetical ideas. Whereas on the job training, I'm getting to apply what I'm learning right now and it lasts so much longer.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
What about you? What experiences in mentorship have you had?
Yeah. So I honestly didn't know that I could be a worship pastor. I didn't know that that was like a real thing. Maybe in the back of my head, I knew that that was something, but I never thought that was something I could do with my life. One of the only things I've ever been like decently okay at is music. Mm. And so I was pursuing a degree in music and I toured in a band for a while called Righteous Vendetta. And so we played shows, we did the record label thing.
Are you on MySpace?
Yes. In Australia is MySpace. Okay, that's the only one. Yeah. And so I played with those guys for about a year and a half, 2 years and thought that was going to be the dream, but I was miserable. Mm. Like I loved playing the shows. I liked those guys and stuff, but being on the road so much, it was difficult being gone that much. And so, when I had moved home, I had gotten approached by a local pastor who was planting a church and asked if I would want to be a worship pastor. And it was almost like the light bulb went off. I was like, well, why haven't I been doing this before? And so, but God almost, he used that moment to just remind me of his goodness. But through the years of music and everything, the one who really developed that and mentored me was Charlie and Katie Carpenter. Mm. And they saw, no matter how rough of a youth kid I was walking in, they saw something. Maybe at first, maybe it was they just needed a warm body on stage to play guitar or something. But honestly, it developed into who I am. And they really showed me what a relationship with Jesus Christ looked like versus just going through the rituals and the Apostles' Creed and all that stuff.
Even if that warm body had a Budweiser t-shirt on?
Yeah, well, it was a Guinness t-shirt.
Guinness.
So make sure we get that right. No. So, yeah, exactly. They saw through that. They saw something deeper, and they didn't just stop me from, it's like, well, you're wearing something inappropriate. And I'm sure they had the conversations, like now being a pastor, I'm like, oh, man, there's conversations I've got to have that I don't want to, but trying to even put myself in someone else's shoes, like where are they in their walk?
I think of the conversations that Charlie and Katie had after Wednesday night.
Oh my goodness.
We would leave and they'd be like, gosh, those,
what are we doing?
Seriously. When are we going to talk to them? When?
You remember when we played at the Wesleyan camp in Rapid City?
Oh, yeah.
And we had went to Grant. It's funny. Grant's over here laughing because he knows exactly where I'm going. We had went to Rapid City and we stopped in. I think it was Aladdin's Palace or something. Oh, yeah. It was this arcade they had in the mall over there. And we won, of course, it cost you probably $50 by the time you're done, but we won this $5
Pirates flag.
And it was
skull
and
crossbones. Like
skull. I mean, you would have thought if Mitch would have had a beard, he would have been red beard at the point instead of black beard. Yeah. But we put that thing on the antenna of course, their parents' Suburban that we took up there.
Yeah.
And roll in that place with.
Still have?
Yeah. So we came rolling in hot into Cedar Canyon Campground with a pirate flag.
and just, I mean, windows down, like, yep, yep, and just yelling the whole time. And I can't imagine when people are like, who are that? And I, who ladies, are those people?
Were they family camp or ladies? I don't know.
I don't know. I thought it was for youth. Okay. No, it was for youth because I remember getting whooped during Capture the Flag. Okay. So, yeah.
Which means it had to be youth and not ladies.
Absolutely.
Not have whooped you and Capture the Flag.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There was an older cowboy fella there who was, I thought he was just, you know, mentoring and making sure everything was going kosher and all that. No, he pulled the wool right from under me, and he took the flag and took off, and I couldn't catch him. So,
dang.
Yeah, but yeah, we rolled into that camp, and I can't imagine, like, somebody asked, who are they? And Charlie's like, that's my worship team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I think Jesus probably did that with his disciples sometimes.
Yeah. Who brings you?
Yeah.
Sorry. I know.
Whose kid is that? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. It's mine.
So here at New Life, we have tiers of leadership. We take this from Mack Lake. So Mack Lake talks about leading self, leading others, leading leaders, and then leading departments. We don't really talk about leading departments because that's something our staff talks about, but we don't talk about it with the community much. Leading self is kind of the first step of leadership. Hopefully most people are doing that when they're teenagers and in their college years, when they're kind of learning how to be responsible and take care of themselves, organize their life, show up to places on time. And it's when people demonstrate an ability to lead themselves, and that would include leading their families, like their family's not all consuming that so much so that they can't have time to lead others. Right. Once somebody demonstrates the ability to lead themselves and their family, then we invite them to a next step of leadership, which is leading others. And so I think that's usually where people have to kind of break through, like, I'm worthy to do this. I have something to teach. I'm capable of this. And so somebody eventually breaks through that. And I think also in the leading self step is when it's so important to seek out mentors, mm-hmm. to find mentors. I think the best leaders I've ever known are mentorship squirrels. There's like squirrels gather acorns. It's like they're looking for mentors in everything. Every little endeavor they do, every project they have, they're finding a mentor to help them with that thing. And I think some people can become a consumer in that step and they only choose to be mentored. But hopefully people take the call to the next step and become a leader and mentor other people.
And what's if you're looking for a mentor?
Yeah.
I think we were talking about this earlier today, so I think it's worth saying. What's the best way to get a mentor?
Hey, will you be my mentor? No, that's not the way to do it. However, since preaching this sermon on mentorship, I've had multiple people ask me to be their mentor, so that's okay. Thank you.
Yes, to you.
What about straight up asking questions like we talked earlier, right? Honestly, start asking deeper questions, right? Not just around your dinner table with your family, but asking people in your life groups, in your community, in whatever you're doing, people you're walking beside. Maybe it's somebody you work with. Maybe it's somebody you go to church with, somebody who you know maybe having a rough time, but you can pour into their life in just some aspect. I think it's going to speak volumes.
Yep. I think the wisdom is build a relationship.
Right.
Hey, can I buy you coffee?
Yeah.
Can I buy you lunch?
Mm-hmm.
And if that relationship isn't there, don't just start with, okay, I need to get something from you.
All right, it's like, oh, you need help moving some dirt this weekend? I'll hop in on that. Or you need help tearing your kitchen out? Yeah. Let me know when. Like those things, get inside of it.
Well, and that's great. That's how actually we lead a lot of our men's ministry stuff. Is like, what are you good at? What are you passionate about? We got some guys who are excellent at golf. And so, okay, so they're going to, it's so difficult. I tell you, some guys who love to shoot guns. And so, but there's some guys who have never shot a gun.
Yeah.
And so they get to learn gun safety, but they get to learn it from someone in their group, and they get to learn it from another dude. Some wisdom that wasn't imparted is now going to be a part of their story.
Yeah. So you were talking earlier about how you do that with your kids. I mean, bringing them along so that you're going to go work on something, bring a kid and.
Yeah. So on Thursday, we're going to go over, there's a gal in our church who, a contractor in town, he just kind of like skipped town. And, she has all these things like a vanity and flooring and all this that hasn't been installed yet. And she has no idea what to do. And so we had our men's group this morning, and I just put out the ask, and there's about 9 or 10 of us there, and a lot of them are on spring break with their kids right now. And so, but another guy's an actual contractor. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, yeah, I can supervise you guys and kind of, you know, help you out with some of this, but we're just going to go do that. And I want to take my kids along, because when they see us serving as not only like pastors or church people, but as dads,
yeah,
hopefully that's going to be something they're going to want to do for their neighbors one day. We got a lady who lives next door to us, and a single mom, and there's some times where she just can't get some things done, or she has boys that are getting to a certain age where she can't have certain conversations, it feels like.
Yep.
But when it comes from, hey, you go to Mr. Stevens' house, like, he'll talk to you about this stuff, and we've got to have some cool conversations.
And it sounds like in all these examples that it takes intentionality.
Yep.
For most people, this doesn't just happen naturally.
Right.
Most people caught fire in some way, and they recognized either I'm desperate for some help, so I got to look for somebody to mentor me, to teach me. But you have to eventually say, I'm not going any further unless I'm leading somebody as I go. I'm going to be intentional to actually step into the Great Commission that God called me to.
Yeah. Well, it's the Paul and Timothy model. Like,
yeah,
who's your Paul in your life,
yep,
right? Who's leading you? And who's your Timothy? It doesn't matter if you've been saved for 5 seconds or 50 years.
Yep.
You should have a Paul and you should have a Timothy in your life.
Yep. It doesn't matter what you've learned something. I mean, if you know how to cook, or if you've graduated from high school, or if you've ever had a kid or gotten married or gotten out of debt or lost weight, like whatever you've done in that process, you've learned something that can be passed on. You have wisdom to pass on. Right. Find somebody who doesn't have that wisdom.
Yep.
Pass it on to them.
Yep.
Rich has helped me with that, with even just the technology side of worship nowadays, like trying to figure some of this stuff out, like we're doing today.
Yeah.
Because we do want to reach people who may not be able to come into church and do all that stuff. And so there's tons of times I've reached out to Grant and Mitch and like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
And they've been more than happy to help out. At least they pretend they're more than happy to help out.
Oh. We're just YouTubing it while we talk to you.
No. This is how I taught that idiot pastor at the other church.
That's right. You guys are dumb.
Yeah, what's the third one? Because we are.
Oh, are we over?
We're getting close.
Getting close.
Yeah, so you send me that third one, Mike. Send it home.
The third level of leadership is leading leaders. So that's, I've demonstrated I know how to lead others. I'm going to now teach others to do what I've done. That would be leading leaders. Is there any questions or anything being thrown out on?
We don't.
No questions.
Nope, I can't throw
you guys. We're so good. We've answered all your questions before you've even asked them.
That's right.
That's what it is.
So, how are you developing leaders in your area?
Depends on the area. We are very intentional about creating hierarchies of. That sounds not like in a. I'm going to lord it over people kind of way, but
not a dictatorship.
There has to be levels. There has to be something, yeah, to a, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm able to say, okay, these are the people who have demonstrated not only a willingness, but also a capability. And so I am constantly searching for, we're leaning heavily into church planning right now. And so we're looking for not just people who can lead others, but also people who can like lead an organization. That would be the fourth, lead department would, yeah, be the force level. Like, who is that I could really pour my whatever I have to pass on? Who can I intentionally give that to? And so we've been talking a lot about how do we identify those people.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good to raise up leaders. And one of the things I've always said is I want to kind of work myself out of a job. So if I do, you know, go out and get hit by a bus and I go to be with Jesus, like the joke is always, you know, first off, neener, neener.
Yep.
And I'm with Jesus and you're stuck here. But secondly, the church is going to go on because it's not about one or two people.
Yeah.
It's about the body of believers.
The best example I have of that is Paul, our discipleship pastor. When he came here, we didn't really have many men's groups. Did we have any men's groups? I don't think, or men's life groups.
Nope.
I don't think we did. And he came in and he was like, I'm going to start one. And then he took that initial core and he kind of helped a couple people in that group learn what it looks like to lead. And then he kind of sent them out and they started life groups and
awesome.
Then those groups. And it's just kind of multiplied. And he multiplied himself and he was able to demonstrate what it looked like to lead a men's group. And now as a result, our men's ministry is growing faster than any of ours.
And that's awesome.
And that's why we call him Father Paul.
Father Paul.
You know, so.
We don't, it's not like a.
Papa Paul?
He didn't earn that title. It was given to him. He doesn't wear a collar.
No, he does not. Yeah. It's a shame.
We can change it.
Yeah, I don't know. That was great.
Yeah. We got it in.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can mentor people. You can mentor people, and you should find someone or people to mentor you.
Heck
yeah. Hey, if you guys like this, please give it a big thumbs up. And if you didn't like it, would you please hit the thumbs down twice?
That's right.
Just to make double sure. Two thumbs down. Yeah. That's
to make sure it sticks.
Okay. Yeah. Also, please subscribe. If you subscribe, this for one notifies you that it's 4 p.m. on a Monday, but also it helps get the word out that this is happening and lets people know they can tune in and we can grow the crowd and the community that is watching this. So please like it, please subscribe, and share it with all of your loved ones. Share it with your enemies. Really stick it to them, please. Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else, Pastor Mike, that we need to?
I think that's good.
Okay, well. You should banny us out of here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, Jesus loves you unconditionally, and he died to give you
new life.
Later.